Caller says we need to hang on to the money and card. Best of both worlds. We get paid in cash, even direct debit. I do wonder sometimes if the more cash you have, the more resources you have, the less worried you are about cash. I think for a lot of us, and this could be as far out as the old Fannett Lighthouse, but that if you are the type that, say, for instance, you lost your job, you'd be under pressure immediately or within a short period of months, that you're more keen to be able to hold on to the tangible that is cash. Greg, I know three girls who trained as OTs in Edinburgh. They tried to get jobs here without any success, so they all headed back to Edinburgh and are in permanent jobs there. I mean, fair play to them. But that's just a terrible situation. And we're going to be speaking to people, if not today, certainly tomorrow, who are training in this area and don't see any future for them here. Yet we're being told that every effort is being made to hire these people. So there is a blockage there that needs rid. Surely there is a law in this country or in Europe that every child's entitled to the same treatment. Our services are holding back these children, nobody else. Lawyers need to step up and take this on against the government. This is against our human rights. I heard a comment earlier stating we are the forgotten county. And for everything discussed this morning, it really shows. It's hard to shake that tag with all we're talking about, isn't it? Greg, my daughter is 15 with autism. The system is so slow getting any support. She attends eye care in Buncrana. Only for them, she would have no social outlet at all. Very difficult for all the family. And eye care as well, too. Fantastic work. I name checked them earlier because I know exactly the work that they do. I know the people that are involved in it. It is families themselves. And if they weren't doing it, there would be this massive gap in services. And of course, then, I know efforts are being made to continue supports for people, but up until relatively recently, there was a cliff edge there in terms of supports as you move from, you know, young adulthood into actual adulthood. Okie doke. Right, more on that anon. Stay right where you are. Monday Focus is coming up as well. But now we switch to matters on the fields of GAA, because the DL debate, it's a podcast, you know, and it's broadcast tonight just after the 7 o'clock news, or you can listen to it at your leisure via download or stream it. It's presenter, producer, general dog's body. He's Brendan Devaney. Hi, Brent.
Second best show on Highland Radio.
What's the first one?
Oh, well.
Are you on it now?
Have to be, yeah. What else could I say?
I don't know. You invite me onto the DL debate and I'll blow it up yours as well.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Heading towards now the real business end of the club season, I think, Brendan. So I imagine there'll be a focus on what went on at the weekend on the show tonight. You've got a great team of people to discuss this with you.
Yeah, big show, Greg. It's been coming thick and fast 4 weeks in a row now. Of championship right across the board here, and it's been hard to keep up with at times, but it's been exciting, and the way the draw was, the way they've changed up the championship has kept it very fresh. In terms of the group stages before, you had the last games were often irrelevant to some of the teams that were qualified in that, so the way it's left there, everybody was fighting for something on the last day, and we did a full roundup of all the games. Oisin was doing live commentary from Niamh Connell, Glenn Swilly with Gary McDaid, and then the wrestlers were around the grounds. I was down in Dunloe, Narasa Park, to see a big West Coast derby. So, yeah, it was a great evening. It was brilliant just listening in, all the scorelines coming through and the permutations and that. But now we have our four teams at the top there straight through in the quarterfinals. The next eight play a pre-quarterfinal to get in to join the top four, and the bottom four playoff then for relegation.
So what jumped out from you from the weekend? Anything that surprised you or of note?
Look, I suppose Ayrea topped the group, topped the whole standings, 4-1-4. A lot of people mightn't have seen that before the championship, so they've pushed their way into that. The only, I suppose you're on about the top teams in the county, the only one of those that they played was Gweedore, and they won that match. So they're up there on merits, and Union's after them, Niamh Connell, Kilkear. Probably you'd expect that those three to be in there. There's Gweedore, it's got the push out, Glenn Swilly coming very close as well. So listen, they had a brilliant first half against Niamh Connell. Michael Murphy flying, hitting a couple of goals, and we're looking really good. I think they were 6 points up at one stage in that encounter, but Niamh Connell's experience in the second half just was too much for them. So it's interesting now that The draw was open for the pre-quarterfinal, Greg, and I was at Dunloe-Gweedore. Of course, they drew each other again now in the pre-quarterfinal, and the relegations as well. St. Noel's beat Killy Beggs and they face each other now for I suppose the winners will stay in the senior championship, the losers will drop down in the intermediate. So some teams are going to play back-to-back games there, but certainly, Greg, I think where the standings are, you know, the teams that are have made it through the early quarterfinals have proved themselves. But good performances there. Sean McCool's at the weekend there against Kilkear, you know, like that was a game a lot of people thought Kilkear would win with a bit to spare, but like Oisin Gallen, as ever, just an absolute scoring machine. They had 9 points in a 14-all draw match there. So there's teams, Greg, pushing up, you know, trying to creep in. Clonilly had another good result, 292-7-1 over Four Masters as well. So there's teams, Greg, that are certainly on the up and up for years. I think that the top teams in Donegal had it all their own way, but that looks like it's changing a bit, which will only be healthy for the landscape in senior football.
Yeah, and it gives the top teams a kick up the ass as well, doesn't it? You know, a kick up the bum, sorry, I should say. It's good for the sport in general.
Yeah, indeed. You know, when you're listening, when you're hearing it, Greg, listen, the news come over from St. Michael's, St. Eunan's was 2-2 at half time. I just couldn't get my head around that at all. You know, and then, funnily enough, in the game I was at, you know, it was 7-6 at halftime to Gador, and there was only 2 points each in that second half. Things got very, very cagey. Listen, there's a lot at stake in that, Greg, and, yeah, you know, we've obviously talked about this a lot in terms of how teams play. It went very defensive, but then again, you can understand with things at stake. It's funny that the Eunan's St. Michael's game went the other way around. You know, Gador and Dunlow had a decent first half. I thought really there's obviously an interview up with Desi Gallagher, the manager, after. I was saying, was that something that you planned to do? But he says it wasn't. It's just how the game developed. And Gador have a lot of good ball players in that. You can understand then it becomes this entrenched kind of counterattack. I think from a team like Dunlow, the best way is to go out in the front foot and actually go and try and win the match, you know. And Desi's saying, listen, they're just up from intermediate. Mm. They're continually learning. But certainly, you know, for years, Gador would have been a long step ahead of Dunlow in terms of the matchups. But there wasn't much in it there at the weekend, only a point. So that's a fascinating one going into this pre-quarterfinals.
Right. So talk to us about how this works now for those who are just sort of getting interest in it at the moment, the makeup of it now. So how many teams are left in? So you have the pre-quarterfinals, obviously. There's a couple of slots available in the quarter round, quarterfinals proper. Do we know any pairings at this point? Is it not
yeah,
draw?
We do,
what's
yeah.
the situation?
So the top four teams, I would say, Rua, St. Eunan's, Neve, Connacht, Kilkear, they're through. They're in the quarterfinals waiting. So we have a pre-quarterfinal, much like we had in All-Ireland series, where Donegal were in against Tyrone at that stage to get into a quarterfinal. So the quarterfinal pairings then is Glenn Swilly, Glenn Finn, Gador, as I say, are playing Dunlow. Sean McCulls are playing Four Masters, and Clonidy play Ardragh. So the four winning teams from that will then join those four at the top that I mentioned. They play in our quarterfinals. And then at the bottom, St. Noel's, St. Michael's, Milford, and Killybegs. And as I say, St. Noel's face Killybegs, and St. Michael's face Milford. So that is to see who is going to get relegated, Greg, and go down into the intermediate division.
Some tasty ties in there, isn't there? And some scores to be settled, results to be reversed. It's going to be pretty interesting indeed. John Haran and Dara Boner are your guests. Dara Boner's of the Donegal News, of course, isn't he? To look back on the weekend's action and to look forward to the permutations as well. And what else? There's enough there to be got, because
yeah,
obviously then you've got
listen,
the other.
Look at
the
intermediate, junior,
yeah,
got to
say
know,
that, yeah.
Everything. All the GA news of the week. We've got our intermediate pairings as well. Buncrana are playing Fanna Gaels, Malin Bundoran, Terman are playing Neve Columba, Downing's playing Red Hughes, and in the relegation at that level, it's Letterkenny Gaels, Neve Breed, and Neve Wara v Burt. So yeah, we'll go on to that. We'll go on to the junior, Greg. Any GA news stories, and you always get a few good words from John Jazz Harn, of course. He's never scared of a comment.
John Jazz.
It's great to have Dara up. Yeah, John yeah. Jazz. That's the handle.
I like it. All right. You can listen to the DL debate. It's in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. It's on air just after the 7 o'clock news this evening. And to be honest, if you have any interest in Donegal GEA, where else would you go? Because you're going to have you're going to be right across it all there. Brent, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so very much indeed. All right, take care of yourself. Just after 7 tonight, or then you can listen back to the pod whenever it suits you. And as I say, it's a really good show, even if you're not all into the GEA, especially when it sort of gets to the end of it where it's all interesting and knockouts and stuff. Well, listen to that tonight. You'll not be disappointed. How are you all keeping? Thank you so much for choosing to have your morning with us. Greatly appreciated. A caller says, anyone know why we can enjoy all 48 matches from the Rugby World Cup, a professional tournament, live on free-to-air TV, while some of the best games from our own amateur GEA championships are behind paywalls? Well, do we know the real reason? We probably suspect it, but they will say, well, look at, we're showing more games now than we ever did, and if we didn't do this behind the paywall, these games wouldn't be shown, and so on and so forth. But I think you make a very strong point. And it's the same with the Football World Cup, soccer that is, and the Women's World Cup. All of the games are on the telly. But when it comes to our own national sport, some of the biggest games behind that paywall that you talk of. This is from a listener here. Our then five-year-old was due to start school September 2020. We wanted to get his hearing checked before he started big school, as he had been showing signs of extreme anxiety, which a lot of the time was from how he'd hear things like loud noises, crowds, etc. The doctor checked him over and said he'd request an audiology appointment for him. I had asked about a time frame and he couldn't say how long, but there wouldn't be a hope of being seen before school started. He advised us that going private would be quicker. He referred us for a private appointment and we got seen within a couple of months. So then last month, the public appointment came where he had his hearing checked in the hospital, and then there on Saturday, his follow-up appointment with the actual surgeon to discuss the results. This being the same surgeon we saw 3 years ago, in case people are wondering, we kept the public appointment as our son would still show signs of struggling with his hearing, but this time I knew what questions to ask, etc. This surgeon comes to Scally practice occasionally, and I'm not sure if he's the only one that deals with such appointments. A caller says the emergency department in Letterkenny has not got the staff to deal with emergencies. The receptionist area is no way private. The entire emergency room hears all your business, especially when you have to ask a friend that's in shock due to a fall, that you have asked her all of her health questions in front of a crowded room. The triage room should deal with that indeed. And it's come up before. We got a commitment from the hospital manager that he would look in at the privacy side of things. Like, I've had stories of people being asked really personal, intimate questions. When was the last time you had sex? You know, stuff like that there, to do with menstrual cycles and all that type of stuff in earshot of everybody else. The kind of conversation they would never nor ordinarily have, of course, in front of strangers. Good time to keep the fight going and let the politicians know about it. The elections are next year. It suits them. If you get weary, please don't give up. That comes in from listener Ava. Hi, Greg. While the people of Ireland struggle with rising food, fuel costs, our Taoiseach's away to Belfast to give away a billion to Northern Ireland for some rebuilding regeneration money that we're giving in our high taxation money that should be used to build much needed housing. Well, I mean, there's many people listening that their opinion is very firmly that Northern Ireland is Ireland, and that maybe that's paving the way for a border poll. Right, OK, let us get behind the headlines a little now, because you might know that local authorities, those working with the Fortis Trade Union, working in local authorities, are beginning industrial action today. But what's it about and how might it affect you? Richie Carruthers is Assistant General Secretary of the Fortis Union, and it feels like a long time since I've spoken to you. Good morning to you, Richie.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good, and great to have you back on the show. Right, so I suppose from a county council perspective, how many staff are we talking, and what is the nature of the action?
So in Donegal, we've got upwards of 500 members who are going to be involved in this action. Nationally, there's 12,000 workers who are involved in the local authority sector for Fortis. We're the largest union in the local government sector. Now, I should say that this row isn't new. It's been going on for a long time. We've been trying to resolve it. But essentially, 10,000 council jobs were lost following the financial crisis, and services were only maintained because staff had taken on additional duties above their pay grades across the public sector. And local authorities suffered the greatest reduction in staff numbers during the austerity years. And it resulted in what we've described, Greg, as significant grade drift. So people working above their grade. Now, we're after one thing and one thing only. It's a fairly straightforward ask. We want the management to introduce a job evaluation process, which is essentially an analytical tool used in an organisation to see if the postholder is being paid correctly for the work that they're doing or expected to do.
So, from a layperson or someone outside, it sounds to me then what happened There was a lot of redundancies. The remaining staff put their shoulder to the wheel, took on extra duties. No one questioned at the time, because it was a national emergency, that some of those duties would ordinarily go to someone on a higher pay grade, but it became normalised. And now here we are 15 odd years later, and it's all been blurred now, and people that are doing work that should be compensated more for.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's it in a nutshell. I think what the job evaluation tool does, and it's commonplace across the HSE and in the higher education sector, lots of places in the private sector use it. Every local authority in the six counties and in England, Scotland and Wales uses it. So there's no guarantee. It's evaluation exercise to ensure that people are graded properly. There's no commitments or guarantees for people who go into that process. The Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission have confirmed that the job evaluation tool is good in terms of ensuring equal pay for work of equal value. And we're now dealing with a local government management sector, which is simply just tone deaf to the reality that workers are no longer willing to act at a higher level and be paid at a lower level, as it were. And 85% of our members voted yes in a ballot to give us a mandate for action up to including strike action. So we kicked off the industrial action this morning, Greg, and that means that all of our members will be refusing to engage in non-statutory political representations, so verbal, written and email from politicians. And last Wednesday, I wrote to every councillor, senator and TD in the country confirming the action would take place and apologising in advance for the impact that this may have on the critical work of an elected representative.
But so can you give us an example of a typical contact from a politician that will now not be cooperated with?
So politicians would, particularly councillors, would make routine contact throughout the working day of local authority staff, inquiring about things that might be happening in roads or water or developmental works. So that won't be responded to. Mandatory or statutory engagements will still be responded to. So workers will still prepare agendas for meetings and municipal district meetings and help with the administration of the democratic structure, as it were. But that informal day-to-day contact is not won't be adhered to.
But the councillors and the politicians will go back and say, look, I can do nothing. I can do nothing for you. The staff won't work for me. And blame you guys for that. I mean, is it not really the public that's going to feel the heat on this, and you'll get you'll be the bad guys?
So actually, the opposite has happened, surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly. Yeah. Like in Dublin City Council over the weekend, the political leadership of all the main political parties and the independent grouping signed a motion to go to council supporting the force action. So up and down the country, we've had really positive feedback from councillors, TDs and senators. And in this county, in Donegal, we've had a lot of positive feedback and support, because I think people realise that hard-pressed local government staff have had enough. And they're you know, really, people are working above grade. And I think it's seen by people in the political system that it's no longer sustainable. So whilst you're right, we're not in dispute with politicians. This is workers exercising their democratic right and not to do part of their work as part of the ongoing dispute.
And I presume the staff are saying, look, we're not looking for pay rises. We're looking for the pay we're working. That would be the argument. And as you say, if this evaluation tool is used, there's no guarantee that someone might get a pay rise. I mean, obviously, they'll suspect they'd have a fair chance of it. But this is about being paid as you should be for the work you're doing, rather than seeking a pay rise.
So it's a precursor step. Actually, it's just the ability to have your job independently assessed or analysed to see if you're doing work at a higher level. And I should say this, there is no guarantee that would be the case, but there's a recruitment crisis in the local government sector. I remember speaking to you years ago during the financial crisis, and Donegal lost a disproportionate number of those jobs. So local government was once the employer of choice. That's now no longer the case. People are voting with their feet, and there's a recruitment and retention crisis in the local government sector as people go and work elsewhere, including the private sector. So we think that this is a good tool to keep people, to maintain people, to ensure that we have people across the six public services centres in Donegal, for instance, to deliver key services to the public. And like, we would prefer not to be in this position. The ask is modest. Just give us the process on which to deal with the issues to ensure that people are validated properly. And the local government sector management, Greg, I should say this, they've said two things in the same breath, which is contradictory. They've said, on the one hand, everybody's graded properly and there's nothing to see. And in the same breath, they say, if there is job evaluation, it's going to cost a fortune and everybody will be regraded. I would say in response to that, it can't be both. It has to be one or the other, right? So the dispute is...
Well, they don't trust the mechanism. As far as they're concerned, now is the status quo moving forward. Why upset the apple cart? And they fear, obviously, that this this evaluation would rejig things to the point where people would have to be paid more money. Richie, you've got a broad mandate from your members, FORSA members. How does this escalate? Because, you know, of course, this is the type of action, whilst it's important and it's significant, it falls off the news cycle really quite quickly. So, you know, what is the next action? When are we likely to see that?
So I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. I think that the political response has been really overwhelming, and politicians have been writing to Minister Dara O'Brien seeking for him to intervene, and county councillors have been placing down emergency motions at council meetings. But there will be an escalation over the coming weeks as a result of this, and definitely could result in workers pulling out and putting boots on the ground with full-blown strike action. So a small window of opportunity, Greg, exists for the local government management to engage in a sensible, solution-focused discussion under the auspices of the Workplace Relations Commission. My phone is on, and I'm waiting to hear if anybody wants to make contact within the political system or within the local government management agency to go back to negotiations and back to talks. But the row isn't going to go away by simply pretending it doesn't exist.
Now, the local government management agency who you referenced, they're saying that, you know, yes, both parties went into the WRC and the matter could have been referred to the Labour Court, but instead you decided to commence this industrial action and say that this is contrary to the provision of the public sector pay agreement, building momentum. What do you say to that?
What says you? Well, look, that's, you know, I've heard this line trotted out. The dispute was supposed to kick off in late June. As a result of discussions between myself and the leadership of the LGMA, we referred the row to the WRC, and the terminology we used was that both parties would engage constructively and meaningfully in order to resolve the row. We had two goals of it at the WRC. It was neither constructive nor meaningful, and therefore talks broke down. This is legitimate because workers are kind of fed up and they're now voting with their feet. But it is avoidable and it is solvable, right? So we remain available for meaningful discussions under the auspices of the WRC. Greg, you've been covering industrial disputes most of your career, certainly for all the time that you've been working in Highland. It normally ends in some negotiation somewhere where people can live with. It will require give and take on both sides, but we can't negotiate on our own. And the LGMA need to put their shoulder to the wheel and need to be serious and go back to the negotiating table. Otherwise, this is going to continue and it's going to escalate.
All right. Well, between the jigs and the reels, I don't think Dara O'Brien's going to be booking a month in Downing's next summer. But anyway, thanks very much for your time. Take care. All right. That is Richie Carruthers, Assistant General Secretary of the FORSA Union. And the reference there, of course, is that it's Minister Dara O'Brien who is their go-to guy there and is hearing plenty from Donegal Listening, open to discussion, but certainly hearing plenty. It is the 9 till noon show at 11:30. How are you all? Back with you more, back with more for you very shortly. Okay, now as part of, it's Monday focus time by the way, as part of Palliative Care Week 2023, the All-Ireland Institute of Hospice and Palliative Care is calling on people in the Northwest to become better informed about its benefit. The campaign reaches its milestone 10th year this autumn and will take place on the 10th to the 16th of September. So we're in that week now. This week and this item aims to educate people across the region about the positive impact that it can have on life quality and to encourage them to learn more about the services available should they need them in the future. Karen Charnley is director of All Ireland Institute of Hospice and Palliative Care, and is with us now. Good morning to you, Karen.
Good morning, Greg.
It's lovely to have you on the programme. Are we getting better talking about this stuff now? I get a sense, maybe it's because I'm getting older and I'm really talking about how I feel. But do you know, it kind of a wee bit like will writing and stuff. Maybe, you know, when we are in good health, or those around us are, we tend to either avoid or just choose not to talk about, you know, hospice and palliative care.
Yeah, we commissioned a survey to inform palliative care about people's perceptions, and we found that 40% of adults prefer not to think or talk about palliative care, and 50% of adults think that palliative care, if someone's receiving palliative care, it means that they're in the last days or weeks of their lives. So for us, this shows that misconceptions about palliative care persist, which means that some people who could benefit are less willing to seek it and potentially missing out on the quality of life benefits that palliative care can provide.
Some people can live long and the aim is full as possible lives whilst receiving palliative care.
Yeah, that it isn't just about that end of life. I suppose in some instances last days and weeks. But what we that palliative care can be received from diagnosis and prognosis onwards within someone's journey.
And the thing is we don't want to talk about it. But lots of us who've had someone who's passed on, either under the care of a hospice or in palliative care and or both. It is often a positive element of a very difficult experience, and that's where it gets difficult to talk about. But that's why people fundraise so much for these types of services, because they understand how they can improve people's quality of life with a terminal diagnosis.
I suppose people, and I suppose it's understandable, maybe people don't want to think and talk about it, but what we'd encourage people to learn more about the benefits of palliative care, also to have those conversations with family members and friends, you know, loved ones, about how they'd want to be cared for, where they'd want to be cared for, because I suppose the research evidence suggests that, you know, that those conversations can be really supportive when the need arises in the future, that people can feel that they're honouring meeting someone's wishes.
So hold me by the hand and lead us through it then, you know, sort of what we're talking about here. When to have the conversation, how to have the conversation, even maybe how to put plans or preparations in finding what resources we might be talking about locally, because I think that's where the problem is then. It becomes, we perceive it to be complicated. So talk us through, Karen, what we're talking about here.
Well, I suppose thinking of different information sources, I'd encourage people to look on the palliativehub.com. We have a series of websites with a lot of information around this area. I'd also be one of our member organisations, the Irish Hospice Foundation, have developed the Think Ahead Pack, which really is a document, but it gives people the prompts they'd need, ask them the questions to allow people to start planning ahead for the care that they'd like. But what we'd very much say, and I know even with my parents at home, having those conversations about, well, where would you like to be cared for? Would you like to be cared for at home? Or would you prefer, if the need arises and symptoms arise, would you like to be cared in the hospital or a hospice? Having those important discussions and thinking ahead about the type of care people would want, it's kind of important to have those discussions.
Yeah, and how do you have them? Is there any advice on that? Because, you know, I know in my parents' situation, God rest the two of them, and I had a fantastic relationship with both, don't get me wrong, but if I went in and I says to my dad, who was 16 in his head till the day he died, can we talk about, I would have been chased, do you know what I mean? Now obviously you can't compel people to have these discussions, but how is the best way to approach that, I wonder?
And maybe taking the prompts, maybe at the, you know, if someone's, I know my own father, again, using him as an example, he had a serious problem with his eyes. And that did open the opportunity to have some of these discussions to say, well, what are the plans for the future? Where have you set out your plans? So sometimes there might be good opportunities suppose we can't force anyone to have these discussions, but I think it's raising that it would be useful to have them with family members.
And also to the other side of it, and we're all different, but we kind of fall into similar categories, I think. I would say there are people maybe who are getting a little bit older that they have a bit of stress and anxiety as to what might happen to them. Do you know what I mean? And they don't want to bring it up either. So it actually probably for some, if not many, would be a welcome conversation. We may never need to go down this route, but if we do, do you know what I mean? So there's a peace of mind and a person feels they have control over their future.
Well, and I think it's for all concerned that, you know, as a family member, that you're being clear about what type of care they'd want. Because I suppose we all have different views. Like some people may want to be cared for completely at home. Other people would be happy to, you know, be cared for in different settings. I would also flag that, say, and you mentioned around local hospice services. So Donegal Hospice this week, they've got a wide range of events taking place throughout the week. So in Letterkenny and Letterkenny University Hospital, they're having information stalls from 12 till 4 in the staff dining room. In Donegal Hospice, they're having an open day on Wednesday from 2 till 4, and they're encouraging people to come and visit the hospice. Or they've also got pop-up stands in Letterkenny Shopping Centre and McElhenney's in Ballybuffy on Friday from 11 till 3 as well. So they're really supporting Palliative Care Week, and we're very appreciative of that.
And pardon my ignorance, Karen, when we talk about the planning and the conversation, it's not like booking things or securing things, is it? It's knowing people's wishes and what they might want given what circumstances may arise, isn't it? So it's really planning to fulfill their wishes rather than actually to say, right, you're going here and you're going there and you're going there. You know what I mean?
You wouldn't be booking someone in somewhere, but it's to start having those conversations. That's why I'm like the think ahead form. It's really, you know, and if people Google, but also if people visit the palliativehub.com, there's lots of resources, but it's those prompts about thinking of the future. But I suppose like during Palliative Care Week, we're keen to kind of highlight the benefits of palliative care and how it supports people's physical, social, emotional and spiritual needs and puts the person at the centre of the care. And that if people were under the care, or, you know, when the need arises under the care of palliative care, that they'll be, those services are there to support them with planning ahead as well.
So, sort of jumping backwards to the, maybe something I might talk to at the start. So, like, do people resist engaging with palliative care? What do they do as an alternative? Do you know what I mean?
Well, I suppose sometimes, and we'd hear that people, are resistant to accessing those services or might not seek them out because they often think, oh, it's the last days or weeks of life, when in fact people can be in receipt of palliative care for a long period of time. And it might be that the access services and then a discharge from services as they no longer require them. So I suppose, again, thinking of a family friend I have, that they he was in receipt of palliative care service, was in the inpatient unit. The unit was able to support them with symptom management. He was discharged back to home. He's currently under community palliative care services and he's still he has advanced cancer, still receiving treatment as well as part of that. So often people sometimes think palliative care, last days, last weeks, and there's no other treatment being provided. When in fact it can be that, you know, palliative care can come in and out as needed and is there as a supporting service along with people's other medical specialities, be it if they've advanced cancer, heart failure, renal, lung conditions, neurological conditions and the like.
And in providing these services and supports, and people do it to the absolute best of the ability, a lot of the time it is sort of interacting with other areas of health service, and presumably, you know, the same challenges exist for palliative care providers in engaging with the other areas of health that do for the, you know, the population as a whole. But I suppose, that being said, though, there is a level of knowledge and experience there that would mitigate as much as is possible those frustrations.
Yeah, Yeah, I suppose it's palliative care teams are well used to engaging with people's other medical teams as well. So that is really the focus of the of those services as well. So, yeah.
What other interesting findings or findings of note came from that survey, in your view, Karen?
Well, we did find with the survey results that people do have a good sense of palliative care. So there was positives as well that, for example, nearly 8 in 10 adults agree that palliative care also supports families, friends and caregivers. 7 in 10 think that palliative care should be considered as early as possible when diagnosed with a life-limiting condition. So there is a number of some of the stats that are showing that people do have an understanding, but that there still are some misconceptions. And that's why we're, this is our 10th year of running Palliative Care Week. So, but there's still more work to be done in terms of supporting people to learn more about palliative care and its benefits.
Yeah, for sure. Where can people get more information?
Well, I'd encourage them to look on our website, which is thepalliativehub.com. And on there, there's lots of campaign resources and leaflets. We also have videos of people's palliative care experiences. There's also a wide number of events taking place. And I know I've already mentioned some that are taking place within your own county, but there's details of a lot of events, both face-to-face, but also online events that people can register and attend. And we'd encourage them to share their experiences on social media using the hashtag PalCareWeek10. But thepalliativehub.com has got a lot of information on it. So I'd encourage that as a first stop to then finding other services that and supports that are out there.
All right, Karen. Listen, it's been lovely having you on the show. Thank you very much indeed. Karen Charney there. Who is director of All Ireland Institute of Hospice and Palliative Care. We are in the midst of Palliative Care Week 2023. It kicked off yesterday, as you heard, some great events there for people to attend if you so wish. Now, I want to mention to you, it's a year out, but the spaces aren't necessarily open-ended either. David James is leading Highland Radio's Hooly to Salou in 2024. It runs from the 14th to the 21st of September 2024. And it is your late summer sorted for this type of event. There's music from Margot, John McNichol, Robert Mazzell, Hugo Duncan, Claudia Buckley, Matt Levy, Sean Cuddy, Olivia Douglas, Gavin Gribben, Jim Devine, Sinead Black, the Ryan Turner Band, and on it goes. There's two more here, but I mentioned Shawnee Crampsey and Trevor Lochry. So for €817 per person, you get access to all of those stars with nighttime shows, poolside shows. You get 7 nights B&B in the 4-star Sol Costa Dorada Hotel. 7 nights dinner B&B. So your dinner and your breakfast is sorted, your hotel accommodation is sorted, and all your entertainment is sorted for €817 per person. So you could spread that out in your mind over the year. It might be well within your means. Now, that includes the price, all access to shows, airport transfers, dinner each evening with wine included. So if you want more information on that, go to countrymusictours.ie or call 0749 119 95. Flights aren't included, but the staff there will help you with that, or you can source your own flights. That's completely up to you. The dates are the 14th to the 21st of September. 817 per person sharing, and it's going to be a cracking week, I would say. Great fun, that. And it's led by Highland Radio's David James. It's the Salou 2024 Highland Radio Hooly. All right, OK. A caller says, is there a problem where the well-resourced organisation who shout the loudest and can afford to produce professional reports on the perceived needs get what they want to the detriment of parents, carers, people with disabilities, alienated victims, etc., who are not or are minimally resourced and who are traumatised because their needs are so devastating? This is a problem. A caller said he went a couple of days ago to climb Muckish Mountain, and there were a large number of cars parked alongside the road. No parking facilities. He met a lot of tourists from a number of different countries, but there were no restrooms facilities in the area for people to use the bathrooms or even wash their hands. Sometimes you wonder, we might get gates before we get parking there. And on it goes. More of your comments here to come on the way, but we're going to take a short break. Stay where you are. Back with more after these. Right, we're joined on the programme now by Councillor Donal Mandy-Kelly. Thanks for taking the time to speak to us, Donal. Good morning to you.
No problem, Greg. Good morning to you and good morning to all your listeners, Greg.
Right, OK, so you finally got to sit down with Uisce Air and formerly Irish Water. A long time coming, a useful meeting, do you feel?
Yeah, Greg, listen, I suppose any time you get Uisce Air and the senior executives or officials in front of you, it's positive from word go. And listen, as you stated, it was definitely a long time coming. Something I pushed hard for myself, as did other councillors as well, for a long number of years. But listen, we finally got to meet them face to face. It was positive, Greg. Every councillor got their opportunity to, I suppose, raise issues in their own area on behalf of their constituents. And, you know, that was very, very important. And I feel it was positive. Listen, there's a lot of issues to be ironed out with that scaring as well. And listen, we'll keep doing that, pushing forward.
But I suppose that's easy to do when you've got dates and timelines, which we have for some of the issues. And of course, you're going to be focusing on the Letterkenny and surrounding areas. Bomney and Tullygay, residents in those areas are subjected to regular outages, 11 in 14 days. What was the update from Uisce Air in relation to that situation?
Yeah, Greg, as you're fully aware, that's something I've been pushing hard on for the residents of Bomley and New Mills, Tullygay and Cornwall areas. And as you said, the 11 outages in 14 days, and that has actually increased since the meeting. As recent as yesterday and the day before, there'd no water either. I was very strong on this with officials of Uisce Air, and I wanted this addressed as a matter of urgency. I did ask them, because they had stated to me before that they were committed to addressing this issue in the first quarter of 2024, and thankfully this is still scheduled to commence in the first quarter of 2024.
And is it actually work or exploratory work, i.e. do they recognise the problem for that area and have a plan in place for early 2024 to actually fix it?
Yeah, that's what they're telling me, Greg. Listen, they carried out hydraulic analysis assessment, and what that is showing up at the minute seems to be issues with busts and valves. But they have, as I stated, they have to put on new infrastructure on the ground there for them residents. They haven't committed to looking into this now and to addressing it in the first quarter of 2024. And another thing I also raised to them, Greg, with regarding in that area as well, was, you know, I raised very strongly that they look at Loch Derg there. It's a loch that's up between the mountains in Kirknady and Kirk there, between kind of where the windmills are, you know. And as I said in the meeting, it mightn't be viable, but it's an option that I've asked Irish Water to look into, because I think it could be a solution to resolving issues along that area there, Bomley, New Mills and all, because it would feed right down into it. And listen, they took it on board. They are going to look into it, and you know, I think it's something that could work out positive. But Greg, the most important thing is the works that are scheduled for 2024. Irish Water did commit to me at the meeting that they are going to be pushing forward with them. So, you know, that's a good news story for the residents of these areas, and I will be keeping pressure on to ensure that this work does commence as soon as possible.
You also got a commitment that work is going to start in November in and around the Rossbracken and Manicongham areas, but there are other hot spots. Is there any particular areas whereby they didn't have anything positive to say?
Well, listen, you're right again, Greg. That works, and that's very welcome to Rossbracken and Raymohe. They already started now in November of this year. So they're going to be relaying 2.6 or 2.7 kilometres of new pipes there, new infrastructure for all them residents. So that should resolve the problem there. Listen, there's other councillors had issues in their own areas that they weren't happy with, weren't been addressed. And I suppose even as Michelle there, you know, I raised the issue there, and a housing estate in particular there that have got a number of calls in Letterkenny is Oran Hill. There seems to be a problem there with the storm weather seems to be connected to the sewers. And listen, I have been pushing and looking into this, and Donegal County Council, they have said that it's under the authority of Irish Water, and Irish Water don't seem to want to take responsibility for it. So I have asked for answers on this. Now, I didn't get the answers on the day, but they are to revert back to me. and I will be following up on it because this is something that needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
I was up there in Metals Residence on Owen Hill, and we're seeing pictures as well. We're when it's heavy rain, Greg, the sewers has actually come out of the storm drains, you know, and it's absolutely shocking.
All right, okay.
But listen, there's a lot of work that Irish Water need to commence with, and they need to get the finger out, you know, and we... Another thing we're very strong on was the connection fees. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous, some of the connection fees, the cost that people have been asked. And I'll just give you maybe one example, Greg, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
It's actually a house not far from myself with needed 180 metres of mains piping to put in. And, Irish Water gave them a value of €43,064 to take 100 metres of mains water up to the house. You know, this is absolutely shocking. And, you know, when I asked them to narrow this down, it worked out that the standard connection fee of €2,272. The cost of taking the 180 metres was working out at €27,391.
But the problem is there, is it not that they...
And then the road opening license was another £4,500.
It's terrible, but the problem there is that we don't have time. They've farmed that out to private companies to do that, though. So that might be difficult to get some movement on.
Yeah, well, this is something, Greg, we're just going to have to keep the finger on and keep pushing forward on, because that's only one example. This is right through the county the county, for that matter, where people has been given ridiculous costs for connection fees, you know, and it's shocking.
Donald, thank you so much for your time this morning, and we'll get an update for you as soon as you get anything back from them on the other concerns you raised with them. For now, though, thank you, Councillor Donald Mandy-Kelly. That's where we have to leave it on the programme today. Thank you to the team behind the scenes, Donna Marie Doherty and also Niamh Shields. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9. Stay tuned. John Breslin's up around the Northwest next.